Vishnu Pradaya Krishna Prasthaya Budhare Srimade Bhaktivedanda Swaminidhi Namine Namaste Sarasudevim Gauravani Prajarine Narvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshadarine Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabho Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Yesterday, we're talking about the one or two important things. First thing, the sages, the Rishishwaras, they are referred to, they found out one important thing, that it is not possible to become perfectly happy through the body. Body can never be, under any circumstances, one can never become happy through the material body. So, therefore, their inquiry began in a different direction, that they found out that the they found out that the inquiry outward is not the answer. Going outside is not the answer. Rather, the inquiry was directed inwards. So, this is how the Upanishads have come about. Upanishads is basically the inquiry inwards. Inquiry outwards is referred to as science. The inquiry inwards is called Upanishads. So, difference between Upanishads and the modern science is also looking for the truth. There is no doubt about that. They are also looking for the truth. But only thing is, they are searching outwards. The sages realized searching outwards is not the way to go forward. Rather, they decided to go inwards and looking for the truth. And this is why they have Maitreya Maharshi mentioned to Vidura that in spite of all their efforts to find happiness in this world, they never became happy. The kings in Hastinapur. So, Vidura was not surprised at all that Maitreya Maharshi's answer was, generally the sages are known as Andarmukham. Andarmukham and Bahirmukham, two things are there. Bahirmukham is one whose vision is always outside, who is looking outwards for the answer. We are all generally considered to be Bahirmukham. Bahirmukham means when we have a problem, we will look for a solution outwards. Outside we want to find the solution to our problem. And sages are different. That's the difference between the sages and us. We look outward for the solution, sages look inwards for the solution. You will see this in Bhagavatam also in many instances. Vedavyasa Maharshi is Andarmukham. We are all Bahirmukha. All the sages are Andarmukham. They look inwards all the time. When Vedavyasa Maharshi, after writing Srimad Mahabharatam, when he had a crisis in his own mind about the problem, he was not feeling satisfied, because he explained dharmam in Mahabharatam. Dharmam was discussed in detail, and I told you the problem with dharmam, what it is. Some instances it's very difficult to know what is the right thing to do with dharmam. So it is in that situation that he sat down and reflected, because he is a Andarmukham. He can look inwards. And the answer comes from inside, because they have developed this habit of, they don't run outside looking for, if there is a problem, they go inwards looking for the solution. We all look for outside the problems. Vedavyasa Maharshi is Andarmukham. So it is at that time, the answer came from inside, for him, and that's how he compiled Bhagavadam. The answer came from inside, that I did not explain the glories of Krishna sufficiently, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He wasn't glorified enough through all my writings. He wrote Mahabharatam, he compiled all the Puranas, everything, but still this dissatisfaction inside, that something is missing somewhere. And the answer came from inside, did I not glorify Krishna sufficiently? The absolute truth. So it was then that he waited the confirmation to come from somewhere. Inside, Krishna was telling him it wasn't enough what he has done. But then the answer came in the form of Narada Maharshi coming to see him and telling him that the same thing what he was receiving from inside, the same answer came through Narada Muni's face also. Narada Maharshi told him that you haven't spoken enough about Krishna. And that's how he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. In Lalita Sahasranamam, it's 1,000 names of Lalita Devi, it mentions there, Andarmukha Samaradya Bahirmukha Sudhurlabha, which means that one who is looking inwards, he will find the answer easily. Bahirmukha Sudhurlabha, who is looking outwards, they won't find the answer easily. Sudhurlabha, very rare for them to find. Because if you allow the mind to go out all the time looking for a solution, the mind gets completely caught up in this creation, and it goes its search, continues its search in different directions, just like our friendly scientists who do that. They keep on inquiring, endless inquiry. Every time completely perplexed and confused about everything. So, but they don't seem to stop, they keep on inquiring further. And with the result that they have to spend a lot of their energy throughout lifetime in searching, but they don't find the answer. They are also trying to find out where this whole thing has come about, this whole creation, where did it come from? So they are also looking for an answer, but they are not getting it. Whereas sages, through their inward-looking nature, andarmukhatvam, they realize that the answer is inside. Answer is inside. Because all of us, every single living entity is a spiritual spark. It's a spiritual spark. And that spark is keeping this. And they started studying about this spark inside us. What this spark is doing there. And they realized that it is only due to the presence of that spark inside this whole thing is functioning. We are existing. We are able to execute so many things. We are able to think. We are able to act in this world purely due to the presence of that spiritual spark inside. So their inquiry has given up completely outside and gone inwards further and further. When that inquiry started progressing, the result was Upanishads. Upanishads came from that. Andarmukha Samaradhya Bahirmukha Sudhurlabha. As Lalita Sahasranamam says. Lalita Sahasranamam is a famous prayers to Sri Parvati, and there the statement of Sri Parvati's potencies. Sri Parvati is also known as another way as Brahmavidya, the transcendental knowledge. Sita Devi, Sri Parvati, Lakshmi Devi, Sri Radharani, they are all representing the same knowledge in different forms. That's all. But the potency of this knowledge is represented by either of these personalities. So, we were mentioning that, and where the Upanishads began, that is known as Brahmavidya. Brahmavidya means the knowledge of the truth, absolute truth. So, so this acquiring this knowledge of Brahmavidya or transcendental knowledge doesn't happen with a person whose mind is external. That's the first thing. The mind has to withdraw from the world outside. Once it so happened in Hrishikesh, there was a famous sannyasi who used to live there. He's no more. He left his body long ago. So, a qualified person, he has got what they call MA degree, isn't it? Master of Arts, MA they call it, isn't it? He dressed up very well and he went up to this sannyasi and told him that I want to learn this Brahmavidya, the knowledge of the soul, from you. So the sannyasi asked him, do you think you are qualified for that? He says, well, I'm studied well, I spend a lot of time in the schools and colleges, and I got this MA with me. I'm qualified, I can learn, read, think, understand, he says. He says, your MA is nothing but master of Ajnanam, he said. You know, A is refers to Ajnanam, ignorance, in other words. The sages also sees the same way. One who is endeavoring very hard in the outside world to develop the knowledge of the external world is considered to be ignorant from the spiritual point of view. It may help you to get a job or to get some position in this world, but it doesn't help as far as the spiritual side is concerned. So his answer was that your MA doesn't help. What is required is something different. So most of us, we would find this difficult because all our lifetime we spend in the world outside. We never develop this habit of thinking inwards. It requires a little different practice altogether. But once you start that, you will know that it has its own strength. You will realize that this looking inwards has its own strength. And a lot of the problems what we face in our day-to-day life will go away if we cultivate this habit of thinking, looking inwards. When we miss that, that's when the problem starts actually. A lot of problems we get because of the missing this point. The one who is looking inwards, combined with some understanding of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, will take us a long way free from our lot of problems. That nature of balancing the mind inside, within ourselves. So, that. So, this, what we are looking for inside, what is that thing, that spiritual spark inside? We can't see that outside, we can only see it inside. It is from the inquiry inside that it begins. This thing begins. So, in the Bhagavatam, as well as in the Bhagavad Gita, you will see this later, that when we start this inquiry inside, the first thing the sages found out, one important thing. They started thinking, what is the symptom of the spiritual spark inside? How does the spiritual spark tell us about its presence? So they noticed one important thing, that we all refer to ourselves as I am, isn't it? My existence. I'm conscious of that all the time. You are all conscious of your own existence all the time. Say for example, in this room now, if I close my eyes, I am not conscious of your presence here because I don't see you through my eyes. Isn't it? I can't see any one of you. If I close my eyes, if we put the whole lights off, then also I can't see anybody. But what still, in spite of darkness, in spite of me closing my eyes, I am still conscious of me. Isn't it? I'm still conscious of me. My consciousness of my presence never goes away from me under all circumstances. So the sages found out that one's own consciousness of himself is the factor or the point that where you are consciously aware of the presence of the spiritual spark inside. Even when, if I lose my limbs, say a hand is cut off, a leg is cut off, something happens, still I never lose this identity I am inside. That never goes away. Never. It never leaves me. All the time it's with me. That I am. That experience I am. So they came up with this understanding that the presence of the spiritual potency or spiritual spark inside is only indicating to us one thing, that this consciousness is the most important thing. That my presence inside, which never leaves me under any circumstances. The whole Bhagavad Gita begins with this understanding. If you see, you will see in the second chapter when we begin, the first thing Krishna throws in front of Arjuna is this, that this is what you are, that consciousness inside. And that consciousness never goes away. In vacant state, it's with you. Because in vacant state you know that I am existing, mind is existing, body is existing, senses are existing, everything is existing. If you go into the dream state, again, what happens? The body goes away, but mind existing, I am existing. Still I am existing. If you leave the dream state and go into deep sleep also, body goes away, senses all goes away, mind goes away, but I am existing. Because what is the proof? When you come out of the sushupti, deep sleep state, back to Jagrat, somebody is telling you that you had a good sleep. Who is reporting that? It's that me who was present there at that time. So the verification of my existence even in deep sleep is done in Jagrat state, in the wakened state. These three states are very important because it is in these three states the soul is wandering back and forth, just like you see in the zoo, the tiger walks back and forth through different sections of the cage. Similarly, this is three cages, wakened state, dream state, deep sleep. In these three cages, the soul is back walking back and forth. And in all these three cages, the soul is conscious of its identity. I am existing. So, Krishna is saying there that the you will never have any doubt about your own existence, isn't it? You can doubt about others' existence. But whether you exist or not, that you have no doubt under any circumstances. You're always conscious of that. That's one important thing. The sages found out this as the first answer. And in our experience in this world, the one and the only thing that you are sure of is this thing, that you exist. That's the only thing you are sure of. You are not sure of the existence of others because that depends on your senses. Through your eyes, you can perceive that. You are not, the existence of this world also depends on your senses, isn't it? As long as you have senses, you can perceive this world. Suppose Krishna has not given us these senses, this world doesn't exist for us, isn't it? The world is existing because the senses are there. So, but whether the senses exist or not, I am still existing. I still know that I exist. That's why even at the time of death, when the body is going away, still I am very conscious that I am moving somewhere else. I am going on my own, but body may go, I may lose the body, but still I am going away. This points out to this one important point, that my existence is important, that I am. The only difference, problem here is, that when we say this I, when you are not in the realized state, you identify with the false ego, ahankaram. Ahankaram is your I at that moment. Today when we talk to each other, it's all I is based on ahankaram, false ego. But when this I goes away from the false ahankaram to the original realized state of the soul, then you are properly situated. You are in your spiritually realized state. That is what the sages have found out. Now, if you ask anyone in this world, God exists or not, people will give different answers, isn't it? Somebody says they'll agree with you, God exists. Somebody says, where is the proof? That'll be the answer from them. They'll ask the question, where's the proof? And again, someone else will say, the God is Vishnu. Somebody else will say, God is Shiva. And someone else will say, God is Allah. And someone, Christians may say, the Father in the heaven. So everybody has their own identity with God. In some form they relate with God, in different ways, under different names, probably. But you can disagree on all these things. There can be disagreement. But on this one issue, that I exist, on that nobody can disagree. Whether he is Hindu, Muslim, Christian, doesn't matter who it is, we all have to agree on this point that I am existing, or everybody is existing. That's an important understanding. That is where Vedanta philosophy begins, from this understanding first. So, here, the sages were saying here that do not fight on this issue. Who is God? Because that won't get you anywhere, the answer. The people may have different understanding. But if you accept this much, that the spiritual spark inside does exist, because the spiritual spark is inside, you also exist. Consciousness of that, that I'm existing, is coming from that, will come from that. The sages decided that the inquiry should be inside. Because prior to going inwards, they have already worshipped different devatas. I was mentioning this yesterday. Devatas like, as I mentioned, Agni, fire, moon, Chandra, Indra, Varuna, the water, personification, the god, the water. And like this, different demigods they have worshipped. And they learned also that through the help of these demigods, they could live a very comfortable life in this world by their mercy. So this is why in the Vedas you find worship of different demigods came about at different times, and there are mantras for pleasing these demigods. Agni is worshipped, and Varuna is worshipped, Chandra is worshipped, Indra is worshipped, Kubera is worshipped. All the different demigods are all worshipped in the Vedic tradition. But it is after that, when they started going inwards and started looking, that transcendental knowledge and perfection in happiness is only possible when they realize the soul inside, which is a part and parcel of Krishna, the Absolute Truth. So this realization came later, and therefore they switched off all the other inquiries and started going further and deeper into that subject. This is why in Vedic literature there is also Karmakandam for pleasing the devatas. There is more importance is given to Jnanakandam. Karmakandam and Jnanakandam are the two major kandam. Kandam means cantos or major part of the Vedas. So Jnanakandam refers to the inquiry of the truth. Karmakandam refers to the inquiry for pleasing the demigods and also for our survival in this world. They also lived in this world happily, not that they were all in misery. We think that due to our scientific advancement, we alone are happy in this world because science has advanced so much or technology has advanced so much. But that is not fact, because even in the times of the Vedic times, you can see their life was centered around much more happiness because of their fine relationship with the demigods. Because that is Krishna's instructions also. Parasparam bhavayanda prema parama vapseda. Krishna says, Ten deva bhavayandena, te deva bhavayanduva, parasparam bhavayanda shreya paramavapseda. You will see in the third chapter in the Bhagavad Gita a verse like this. Krishna is advising us, I have created this system in such a way that you, through sacrifices, please the demigods. Demigods, in return, will provide you everything what you need. Particularly, what we need in this world is mainly the food and a comfortable weather conditions where we can survive here. So Krishna's point is that this relationship between us and the demigods is important. And during the Vedic times, the sages, through the sages' influence, the general mass of people were very much affected by these instructions. So they executed their life in such a way that they pleased the demigods very well. Parasparam bhavayanda, a mutual respect for each other. Te deva bhavayanduva parasparam bhavayanda prema paramavapsyatha. Mutual respect and love, with the result that demigods provided them everything what they needed. Here you can see in the modern world, in spite of all the advancement, we have anxieties about food, isn't it? Now you can see this year in India they are saying that they have to import food now. So many years they were saying they had plenty of food. But suddenly the whole thing has changed. Why? Because the importance have gone away from food to computers. So naturally it has affected, the anxiety has developed. But some or the other they feel that they can import the food from somewhere else. That's how they are trying to find the solution. But this is not the right way to go about that, because food is the first thing for our survival in this world, and Krishna expects us to grow the food. But due to the circumstances now, the governments think in a different direction. Somewhere else somebody is growing food, so you can buy food and substitute for your needs. But whatever it is, these things are to be thought about. So Krishna says here, then the question that was raised to us at that point was, what is that inquiry, where is this going to come to an end? The inquiry comes to an end by knowing which there is nothing more to be known. You will see this kind of statements in the Upanishads. Kasmin vijnyade sarva vijnanam bhavandi. In other words, once you have got to the knowledge of the soul, Or in other words, if you have come to the platform of the soul, the realization has happened, self-realization has come, then you will know there is nothing else to be known after that. Because being situated in the spiritual platform means this, that complete satisfaction, shanti, perfection. Many times we think that, okay, we will talk about going back to the spiritual world after death. Devotees also aspiring for that, isn't it? We also, at least we think, this life has become like this, at least next life let me have a good life. Or at least after death, let something be good for me. This life cannot be improved. We have come to that firm conclusion. But Upanishads are saying to us, it's not like that. Upanishads are saying to us that in this very life, it is possible to know, and they give this word, liberation, is defined in the Vedic literature as shanti. Shanti means peace, within oneself, peaceful about things. That peace is what they are looking for. Tatai param shanti mupayati sakshal. In the Bhagavadam you will see, the word used is shanti. Shanti means that peacefulness inside. And that peacefulness, they say, it's possible even to have it in this life. You don't have to wait till the death. It's only due to lack of self-realization that we are thinking that, oh, we can't do anything about it in this life anyway, so maybe we may as well wait after death for that to happen. And then we have different perceptions of life after death. Somebody will say we are going back to Goloka Vrindavanam, somebody will say I'm going to Vaikuntham, someone will say I'm going to Kailasam, or someone will say I'm going to the heavens. So all these different understanding will be there. But from the Vedanta point of view, the important thing first is this peace inside. Once you have attained this peace within oneself, then the chances that losing that peace is very little. So then he does not care what happens after death. Because if you have that peaceful existence here, even after leaving the body, that peace will take you to the right place, where the soul goes to. It will be the proper destination where it has to go. And that realization comes from release from this bodily identity, or realization of the truth. Therefore, in no Upanishads you will find any reference to going back home, back to Godhead, mentioned like that. There are references like Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam, Yada Pashyanti Suryayo. That is the place referred to as Vishnu's abode. There is only one statement like that in the one of the Upanishads mentioned like that. But there is not any more details than that mentioned. Why? Because Upanishads give importance to this understanding that realize the truth right now here. Don't have to wait till you die to the things to happen. Because most of us are hoping that after death we will go back to the spiritual world, or we'll have a peaceful life thereafter. That's how we take it. But Upanishads are saying to us, you don't need to wait. It may be there. That's not happen. It can happen. But we don't know what will happen. There, we have to take Krishna's words very seriously. Why? Krishna is telling us that at the time of leaving this body, in what consciousness you leave this body, that decide your next destination. That is Krishna's absolute statement. Yam yam vavismaran bhavam. Tejatyande kalebaram tam tam evaidi kaundaya sada tadbhava bhavida andakaleja mameva smarantitva kalebaram yaprayadi samadbhavam yadi nastyatra samshaya. These are two verses in the Bhagavad Gita coming from Krishna's face. Krishna is telling us this, that this is very important. So, in order to do that to happen, first, if we are whole life disturbed over different things, how this can happen at the time of death? This may not happen. So therefore, prior to death happens, we have to make sure that we come to this state of consciousness, that we can leave this body. Sometimes, in spite of our best efforts, it may not happen. It may not happen. Because we don't know what's going to happen with this body, how it will behave at the time of death. Isn't it? Nobody knows. Sometimes even with great souls, Mahatmas, when they leave the body, they have left in very difficult conditions. Very difficult conditions. They had to be fed through the nose, you know, through the tube and all that. Because those things are outside our control. especially with the modern science, they try to keep you going somehow. They won't let you go from here easily. They will put all they can. And you can see, you go to any of these NHS hospitals, you will see there people lying down. They should have gone, actually. But they won't let them go. They will put all kinds of tubes and connections and doctors and nurses, and they also can't do anything. Then why keep this body going like this? When it is extremely unpleasant or unbearable, some people decide they want to give up the body, then they have this euthanasia. They go for that, isn't it? So all these things are going on in this world clearly shows that there is something which keeps this body going. Till the time is right, it won't go. The body won't leave you. And in spite, and the government also, either in the form of government or in the form of doctors, it comes to you and catches you and hold you back here. Because you're not, your prarabdha is not over yet. So you have to stay here till it's over. And that time you can't trust this body. How it will act, you will never know about it. So, the thing here is that before death happens, this realization must come. It is important. Because, you see, this is the reason, in Srimad Bhagavatam you will notice, when Parikshit Maharaj sat down in front of Sudeva Goswami, and he started hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit was a little bit skeptical about various things. He was saying that at the time of death, Tatshaka is going to come, and Tatshaka is going to bite me, and I'll be burnt into ashes. This was his, because Tatshaka's poisonous, powerful poison, what was going to come from Tatshaka, was going to finish him. And this fear was inside in Parikshit's mind. At the same time, he told the sages who were present there, Asatvalam Gayada Vishnu Khada, talk to me about Vishnu, about Krishna. Let me hear about the glories of Krishna. But Sugriva Goswami had no doubt. This is the good thing in there. Parikshit had all the doubts, but Sugriva Goswami had no doubt. He was like a guarantor sitting there saying that, 7 days you have got, haven't you? He says. That's more than enough, he says. Just look at the confidence in Sugriva Goswami. He's saying to Parikshit, you have got 7 days time. That's more than enough. With full confidence he's saying this. I can make sure that you won't die, he says. So, day by day, if you look at Srimad Bhagavatam, you will notice, Parikshit is getting a little bit more anxiety about everything. And he asked certain questions in between, and Sugriva Goswami answered. But Sugriva Goswami was more conscious of the time than Parikshit even. That is why, by the time in the 90th chapter of the 10th canto, you will see there, after Sudama's story was discussed, Sugriva Goswami asked Parikshit, have you got any more questions? Let's finish the questions first, and then we will come to the main business. So, and he could see that so many people who are present there, in there he was noticing that Tatshaka was on his way to come to bite Parikshit. So Sudeva Goswami was aware of that. So he had much more control of the time within himself. So as soon as Parikshit heard Sudama's story, after that you will notice it changes. Bhagavatam takes a little shift. It goes more in towards the knowledge side of it. Then Parikshit, as he finished hearing Ekadasha Skandam, in the 12th canto you will notice Parikshit has become more cheerful. That's why Sudeva Goswami knew that Parikshit is now getting out of his bodily identity. This all you will notice when you come to that in the 12th canto. So that's where, when the realization starts developing inside, I'm not this body. And when you get yourself freed from the bodily identity, you feel a great, great relief from this life. You feel a great relief in a natural way. Not in an unnatural way. In a very natural way, you feel a great relief that so many lifetimes I had been identifying with something false. And today I have realized that identification was a false identification. And you are being freed from that. It's like a release note you get from this body. When you get the release note in the hand, you feel a great satisfaction. Oh, what a fantastic experience that is. And that experience, you have to hear from Parikshit when he mentions that. when he got that release note. Aham Brahma Param Dhamma, Brahmaham Paramam Padam. That satisfaction that I am not this body, I am Brahman. I am Brahman. That realization, he says again and again, Aham Brahma, I am Brahman. Param Dhamam, I am that supreme abode Brahmam. Brahma Aham, I am not different than Brahmam. Paramam Padam, that supreme abode. He keeps on repeating this. And then when Sudev Goswami saw that Parikshit has reached that state of consciousness, he says to Parikshit, close your eyes, he said. And Parikshit closed his eyes and he asked him, what do you see now? He says, I only see yourself and Krishna there in his closed condition. What else do you see? He says, I see you paying your obeisances to Krishna, nothing else. He could only see his spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nothing else. He says, you can open the eyes now. Before he opened the eyes, Sudev Goswami was gone from there. He wasn't there anymore. Sudev Goswami could appear anywhere and disappear anywhere he wants, at any time. He was a yogi as well. Yogic power, all the realizations of a jnani and the great devotee. Everything combined in one person. Three in one. All three in one. So we find all this, how does this all happen, isn't it? Because our state of consciousness is like that. But Sudev Goswami is like that. Jnanam, yogam, bhakti. All three in its top conditions. So Sudev Goswami is gone. He has disappeared. And Parikshit is not laminated. By the time, Parikshit is also gone. Before he opened his eyes, he was gone. He wasn't there. And he has escaped because he has come to this realization. What was left behind was his body. Then Tatshaya had to bite because the curse is there. The boy's curse had to come through. But by then Parikshit was also already gone. He wasn't there. But he bit the body and the body burned into ashes. Janamejaya, Parikshit's son, and many others who were present there, they thought that Parikshit died because of the biting from the Tatshaga. But in reality, it was not so. Parikshit was already gone by then. He has already had his self-realization and he has left this world once for all. Death is for the body. Death is not for the soul. Death is for the body, and that has happened later. And then Janamejaya started his sacrifice and all other things, as you know, how to take the thing. So what it is one thing here is that the realization, once it comes, of spiritual realization of the soul's identity, all problems, once for all, it is solved. There's no more individual problems after that. Sometimes this example is given. You know, when these magicians, when they come sometimes to perform magic at schools and all, then they do that, isn't it? Just to entertain the children. So they have one kind of magic where they bring a lot of ropes and they tie all together, different knots, they put it together. They have one special way of doing that. And they give it to you and they tell you to tie another knot on it. They give it to the children to do that. In the schools, I've seen this, they're doing this. So the children sometimes tie a knot onto it. And there is somewhere in this bundle, somewhere you have to pull one end. If you pull that, all the knots will become loosened. That's some magic in there. I don't know how they do that, but there is something like that. So if you pull that rope, all the knots get loosened up and all the children get very excited seeing this. Because they just enjoy this magic, isn't it? Similarly, this one thing called self-realization, if it happens, when it happens, all problems which we have got with us today, all goes once for all. It is just like tying this final knot, pulling this. So that's why self-realization is the answer to all the problems. All that is why the sages from the very beginning kept telling us, forcing us, that go for this. This is the answer to the problems. There's no other answer. Because you can see in this world, individually you are trying to solve one problem, another problem pops up. You solve Palestine, Afghanistan comes up. You solve Afghanistan, Iraq will come up. You solve Iraq, Korea will come up. You solve Korea, Pakistan will come up. So where is the end to this? And whole life we have to, all you are doing is plugging these holes here and there. So it automatically, this shows one thing, that if the leaders have proper knowledge and proper realization, they will not mislead the world in the wrong way. That is why Prabhupada never accepted any of this political leadership, because he considered them as ignorant, because they are acting on an ignorant platform. This is called avidya. The avidya inside is like this. They may all look very posh and very powerful and good orators and good talkers, good talk well, everything. But knowledge is concerned, it's missing. It's not there. They don't know the solution. So from the Vedic tradition, the answer to all the problems is self-realization. Realize the self, problem is solved. And once you have realized it, these problems don't exist after that. Problems exist because of the identity with the body. So what they were telling us was that there's nothing higher than that. And the sages have this answer. And how to wake up these Upanishads from inside. And Krishna will also refer to this in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says it doesn't take very long to this to wake up inside. This knowledge inside, it doesn't take very long to wake up. It's already there inside. This is the beauty of that. The knowledge of the self is within ourselves. Each and every one of us have that. When this will happen, you can never say. It can happen today, it can happen after thousands of years. That depends on other factors. A lot of other factors. And there you haven't got a lot of control on it, but once you understand the science behind it, what Krishna is going to explain later, and when you are in the right process, in the track, right track, pursuing that process, Krishna says it can happen anytime. Or, even if it does not happen to the full degree, even if a little bit of understanding of self-realization, Krishna says, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahado bhayad. Even greatest fear, you can get a relief from that if a little bit of understanding of the soul comes into us. If a little bit of understanding of the soul comes to us. So, some people will say that, oh, this philosophy is very dry, very difficult for us to follow this. People want something that suits their senses. They don't want something which is a little bit more absorbed in the thoughts and the mind. They find that difficult. But Krishna gives that a title for this. It's called as Dharmamrutam. Edu Dharmamrutam idam. In the 13th chapter, I think, Krishna says this. This is Dharmamrutam, the nectar of dharmam, or the dharmam which is developed into the nectar form, is this. And this will never disappoint you, he says there at that point. That right now, my problems in this world is related to within me. See, what's happening in America or what's happening in Pakistan is not bothering me at the moment. What's happening within me is my worry about it. It's no point in me worrying. Generally, we worry about those things. Why? To escape from my own worries here. That's why I go looking for what's happening in America. How does it help me? What's going on in America? Or what's going on in Pakistan? Or what's going on in Australia? It doesn't help. Problem is inside here. So, we have developed this media and other things to escape from the problems inside here. So that's why you watch the news, so many things are going on outside, you feel a little relief temporarily. That you can forget your own worries and become affected by the others' worries. But that's not the way sages have told us to do. So, if it is like that, you can see our process of education also is the same thing. Lot of unwanted and useless information is pumped into their head at an early age when they could have been a lot more reflective and more beneficial to themselves. But we don't allow them all kinds of information. We tell them, teach them and tell them to learn all these things, to go through the exams and all that. But that's prarabdham, what can you do? That's the way it is happening. But our main problem is how we can be happy within ourselves. As we know, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly Bhagavatam, refers to us this one point that within Maya, anything can happen. Within Maya, anything can happen. You can never say how things will develop in this world. You may, even big leaders admit that when they go for a war, they are not 100% sure that they are going to sort out all the problems. Right now, at the moment, when they enter into war, they think that probably by fighting this war, they can avoid certain dangers in this world. But sometimes it develops into serious problems in different directions. If I remember when we were children, the Vietnam War was going on, 1965, in that time. And those who had been in touch at that time, you will see, Vietnam War, they fought for many years. But at the end, what happened? Many people, many American soldiers and the military personnel, a lot of them had gone crazy after the war. They had serious problems. And many of them have joined ISKCON at that time. Many of our sannyasis had come from that background. If you know this devotee who built our temple in Vrindavan, you will see his name if you go inside to Krishna Balaram Mandir. No, Guru Kripa. Guru Kripa's name is mentioned there. He was a soldier in the Vietnam War. And he has seen such things in the war that after he came back from the war and he met devotees and Srila Prabhupada, he never wanted to leave it again anymore. He said, I've seen the worst I have to see in life. So it is things like that that turns our mind towards Krishna. Otherwise, we won't inquire. We will think of somewhere else something's happening. What can I do about it? This is how we think about it, isn't it? But these things can happen in life. It can happen to us today. It can happen to else and someone else. So the important point here is that in Maya, how things will happen, nobody knows. Maya's world, this is. And we trying to think that we can control Maya, that will be the biggest Maya. To think that we have control over Maya is the biggest Maya. So what Krishna is saying there is that in this Maya, if you think that you can solve the problems by your intelligence, forget about that. Because the scientists are trying to do that. And they are not accepting still that in spite of their best scientific discoveries and scientific process, there is no peace in the world with the human mind. The mind is more disturbed than any other time. If it was possible to do like that through a machine or something, because they are after machines all the time, can they not develop a machine by which you can develop some peace in this world? They never found that. They got machines for everything except for having some peace inside. So that they have not succeeded in that. So Krishna says here that in the Janaka Maharaj's palace also, sages were discussing this topic, how to find peace in this world. So similarly, eventually they all came to this one conclusion, that self-realization is the answer. So when Upanishads were spoken, they were discussed also in such circumstances. They were discussed in the assembly of the great scholars and palaces where the kings had a great assembly of scholars where these things were discussed. So Upanishads were discussed in such places. It was not discussed only in the forest. It was even discussed in situations where you couldn't even imagine. The best example is Bhagavad Gita itself. Imagine Bhagavad Gita was spoken in the middle of battlefield. That itself shows that this knowledge can be discussed anywhere. You don't have to be in the forest, you don't have to be in a cave, you don't have to be elsewhere. In any circumstances, this knowledge can be practiced in life. That's why Vedavyas brought this whole background of Mahabharata war, and in that war this discussion has happened. Right in the battle, middle of the Kurukshetram, in the middle of the war, middle of the war where Kauravas and Pandavas are present, ready to fight each other. So what does that mean? Ready to fight each other means the inside is full of anger. Because soldiers, when they go for a war, they have to be fired up, isn't it, to fight. If you tell them, be peaceful, will it work? You have to tell the soldier to fight. You have to create that fighting spirit inside that. So when they go to the battlefield, they have been given clear instructions that ragam and dvesham, anger, all these are necessary at that point. Only then you can fight. Otherwise you can't fight. So it is in the middle of that, this Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Can you imagine Arjuna's mood at that time? What it will be? Arjuna's mood at that time was, Arjuna is a great person, a great personality he is, a great devotee, and such a great love for him. Not only Krishna, Lord Shiva had such a great feeling for Arjuna. Indra's son, Kunti Devi's son, and a great personality, great in all aspects, highly cultured, highly civilized, and at the same time, when he saw the Kauravas and the Pandavas, he felt weakness at that point. That's how first time he felt weakness. A person who has killed so many people before that in a battle, who never knew what is fear. Arjuna's personality is like this. If he wants to get anything done, he can get it done. That's Arjuna. Purusha Kesari he is referred to. It's a lion among the men. Another word used for Arjuna. The word Arjuna itself means one who is Hrijutam. Hrijutam means who is straightforward. He won't mess around with you. He deals with you direct. If to a friend, he is a friend. And one who has taken shelter, he has provided shelter to them. And this Arjuna had fallen into this situation in Mahabharata war. First time in his life. There's a lot of psychological things behind it. That's also spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. If you look it carefully, you will notice all these things. We'll come to that later. So Arjuna's situation in the battlefield is something very important to know. That when Arjuna came to the war, originally he thought he's going to fight a war and he was geared up for that. It is quite unusual for Arjuna to feel weak in a war like that. First of all, a Kshatriya, and that too a courageous person like Arjuna, never felt weak any time to fight a war. But here, for the first time in Kurukshetra, Arjuna felt weak. That was the first time Arjuna has felt weak in his mind. And this weakness Arjuna felt, it started coming out from inside. And it is that weakness that came out from inside is the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what you read, Arjuna Vishada Yogam, that Vishadam inside. And normally for a Kshatriya, it's an unusual thing to happen. It doesn't happen like that. Something important, why? Because if this Vishadam came to Arjuna, because of that Bhagavad Gita, we got it, isn't it? We owe a lot of things to the Pandavas, the Kunti Devi and the children. We owe them a lot. Why? If Arjuna, through Arjuna we got Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Through his grandson we got Srimad Bhagavatam. Parikshit gave us Bhagavatam, Arjuna gave us Bhagavad Gita. So both of them have done so much to this world. Through their distress, Parikshit's distress we got Bhagavatam, Arjuna's distress we got Bhagavad Gita. Had this not happened, we would not have had either of this, Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have a lot of gratitude to them for what they have given to us. Now, Arjuna felt this unhappiness, and Arjuna's misery is what we are reading in the first chapter. That, therefore, Krishna is saying there that the whatever we may be, Arjuna was a householder. Whether you are a householder, whether you are a sannyasi, whether you are a brahmachari, whether you are a man, whether you are a woman, it does not matter. Whoever it is, the knowledge of the soul can be realized. Nothing prevents them from doing that. And Shastram saying to us that you may think that, oh, this is all meant for the sannyasis, or this is all meant for only those who are in spiritual life. We are ordinary people living householder life. No, it's not like that. The knowledge of the soul and self-realization for everyone who is looking for that. The only thing what is required is Shraddha, seriousness in that. So this seriousness is what is the most important factor in spiritual life. When one is serious in inquiry, you will see the results coming from that seriousness of the truth. That. So in the Bhagavatam, that when we were talked about this, that Upanishads are also saying this, that not in the forest, not in the caves, this was discussed, that this whole topic of discussion is inside us, isn't it? Soul is present within everyone, and that is what we are going to discuss. Because the soul is inside us, inside everyone, the transmission of this spiritual understanding goes from one soul to another soul. And that can happen anywhere in the world under any circumstances. Therefore, when we start discussing second chapter, you will notice Krishna will start talking about the soul and he will make a point there that is it not a great wonder, he says, about the soul. And he will start explaining, and if you go through the examples, some of them, you can see that the soul is really a great wonder in this world, the thing called soul. When you start understanding about the soul, only then you can understand that when you will realize the soul, you can never say. That is one important thing. Where you will realize the soul, you can never say. How you will realize the soul, you can never say. There are so many unknown factors, and there is no definite answer to it. There is no definite answer to it. Sometimes we have this misunderstanding that I've just started my spiritual life. I have to chant 16 rounds for, say, 25 years or 30 years. And after that, I will take the next step. I have to become a sannyasi. And then I have to preach. I have to move around. All these kind of ideas in our head, it builds up. But strictly speaking, it is not like that. It's not like that. Today, as a brahmachari, you can realize the soul, provided you are fortunate enough. Krishna gives you that mercy, it can happen. So therefore, Krishna himself says that this is an unknown entity. Nobody knows about it. Therefore, it's a wonderful thing that how soul is realized. So that is, the Shastram is only helping you to come to this understanding. That's all. Shastram is guiding you towards that. But Shastram is not guaranteeing you that if you do all these things, this is the result like that. It doesn't say like that. Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. Three processes. Shravanam is the process of hearing. From hearing comes everything. Then from Shravanam develops into Mananam, reflection on that. And after you have reflected on it, and within yourself some conclusions have arrived, or you started getting some realization, you are able to hold on to that realization, that's called Nididhyasanam. Nididhyasanam is a word they use for that. So these three things are part of that process, as Krishna was saying about this in the Bhagavad Gita also. So there is some verses which talks about these things in a different background. It says there, Naratvam Devatvam Nagavana Mrigatvam Mashakata Pashutvam Kidatvam Bhavadu Vihatwadi Jananam Sadatulpambo Palpodabjas Marana Paramanandalhari Viharasaktam Je Dugdhaya Mihakim Tena Vapusha. The devotee is saying that Maratvam Devastvam, I may be a human body, I may be in a demigod's body, or an animal in the forest, or I could be a mosquito. I could be an animal, domesticated animal, or I can be a worm. I can be in any body. It doesn't matter. Vihadadi jananam. But as long as my mind is attached, as long as this mind is attached to Krishna's lotus feet, there is no fear of about anything. Because what will happen? Viharasaktam ne dugdhaya ihakim tena vapusha. That will save me because I am situated properly at that time. I'm situated properly at that time. That is the greatest satisfaction. So, Krishna's point is also the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita. That if I remember you at any time, if Krishna is remembered, all the great devotees will pray like this to Krishna. Somehow or the other, Krishna todiya pada bangaja panjarandam advaivame mushadumana saraja hamsa pranaprayana samaye kapavada pittai kandhavarodhana vidhau smaranam kutaste. Who said this? Kulashekhara Alwar said this to Krishna. Kulashekhara was a king. He wrote this famous song known as Mukundamala. Prabhupada quotes from Mukundamala in different places. It is in Mukundamala he says like this, Krishna todiya pada pangaja panjarandam, that your lotus feet, let my mind get entangled there somehow. How? Like what? Like a hamsam or a swan. Swan goes into the water and sometimes it plays around the lotus flower. While playing around the lotus flower, it gets entangled in some of the creepers or something which are lying there, and it tries to disentangle from there. It cannot. It finds it difficult. So similarly, like it got entangled with its feet, if my mind gets entangled somehow or the other with your lotus feet, Kulashekara Alvar says to Krishna that prana prayana samaye kabhavada pitehi, that when the soul is leaving this body, the soul leaving the body is a big topic of discussion. In Brahma Sutram, this topic is discussed. Later on, Acharya Swamiji met Vedavyasa Maharshi in Benares. And the only discussion between Vedavyasa and Acharya Swamiji was about this, how the death, what happens at the time of death. So you will see in their commentaries, this topic discussed in depth and in big length. What is happening to the soul at the time of death? It is an important subject because everyone asks that question, isn't it? At least people who have accepted that there is a soul, they will want to know what happens at the time of death. So, pranaprayana samaye kabhavata pittai. Our misfortune is, at the time of death, kabham, vadam, pittam and kabham, three things. Ayurvedam, according to Ayurvedam, these three things are balanced in the body and therefore you have no illnesses. When there is an unbalanced state, then you get sick. Vata, pitta, air, bile and mucus, isn't it? So, but generally if you have seen people, when they leave the body, even if they are in coma, this mucus will start coming up to the throat. And what the doctors do, they have got a long fork-like thing. They try to remove the mucus from the throat because it chokes them. They can't breathe properly. They put the ventilator on because ventilator doesn't help very much. Still, this mucus is choking them. So they try to scrape away this mucus from the throat so that he can leave the body peacefully. He may be in coma, he may not be even conscious on fully everything what's happening. And they take a lot of mucus outside at that time. Prana prayana samaye kapha vada pitai. And everything is choking at the throat. The soul is trying to leave the body. Kandhavarodhanam. Kandhavarodhanam means blocking that breathing passage. In this situation, when this is happening at the time of death, do you think we will remember Krishna at that time? Is there any possibility of remembering Krishna? First of all, we won't even sometimes be aware where we are. Which general hospital or which intensive care we could be. It could be in the middle of the night or early hours in the morning like this, and there could be nobody there. This thing called ICU, intensive care unit, they don't allow you to go close by. They say, you will bring infection to the patient or something, some excuse they'll say, and keep you away. So that means there'll be nobody to chant the holy name. Even if somebody else is willing to do it, they may not allow you to do it at that time. Then the other thing is that you are yourself not very conscious. And the doctors and nurses, they are not interested in all your, whether you're going back on Godhead or you're going somewhere else. It doesn't matter to them. Does it matter to them? For them, another number, gone, finished, today's job is over. Another one is, the bed has to be paid, vacant for the next one to come in. This is their mood. You don't blame them for that. That's how the life is. So, within all these things, at least in the past when we didn't have these big hospitals, you could die at home. Now they don't even allow you. They want to get you out from there. So, pranaprayana samaye kabhavada pittai, kandhavarodhana vidhau. Kulashekara Alvar asked Krishna, smaranam kudaste, how am I going to remember you at the time of death? He says, is there any chance of me remembering you at the time of death? So, he is very realistic, practical person. He is saying this. So, therefore, while being conscious, where we have little health and we have little energy in us, it is better to engage in Krishna service. It's better to think about Krishna at this time, before such a situation happens. That is waiting for all of us. Nobody's going to be, unless you are so fortunate that the soul leaves the body in 1 second and gone like that, but it may not happen. There's no guarantee for that. So, madutva geheya yadirabi jaiva tadinari narovaya kaschil bhavadu bhavakim kena bhavadi yadiyam hrdi padmam bhavadadinam pashutahe tadiyastvam shambho bhavasi bhavabharam chadvahasi. That it does not matter whether you are a brahmachari or you are a householder or you are a person, sannyasi, who is shaven-headed and seeking the truth, or or a vanaprastham who has gone to the forest, let it matter whoever it is, as long as he has Krishna within the heart, he doesn't have to worry. But if Krishna is not within the heart, then he has to worry. Whether he is a sannyasi, whether he is a brahmachari or a grahastham, doesn't matter. Guhayam geheva bahyabhi vanejva adi adrishikaram jaleva vaniva vasadu vasadekim vadabhalam sadaya seva anandakaranam maapi shambhotavapade sidam ched yoga saochaja paramayogi sajasukhim. Irrespective of what ashram, what condition we are, brahmachari, grahastham, vanaprastham or sannyasam, irrespective of whether we are in a cave or in a house, outside or in the forest, either in the top of a mountain or in the water or in the fire, what does it matter? Where does he live? That is not important, as long as if his mind is attached to Krishna. Attached to Krishna, it doesn't matter. This is the prayers. So, the place is not important. Your position in this world is not important. What is important is the consciousness of the person, where the consciousness is. That determines the next life and the progress from here. So, importance should not be given too much to things. Like, often we get this understanding that we start identifying with one particular situation. I am a householder, so I cannot do it. I cannot do it because I'm a householder. I'm too absorbed in the householder life, so self-realization is not for me. Shastram is saying no. Self-realization is for everyone. Similarly, we think only a brahmachari and sannyasi can do it. No, it's not so. Anybody can do it. There are, and therefore, you will see in the next chapter in the Bhagavadam, when we come to the 12th chapter of the Canto 11, Krishna brings certain personalities there from all walks of life. And he says to us, all these people got self-realized. And there is animals there, birds there, householders there, men there, women there, all types of people, demons there, who got self-realized at the end. So self-realization is not the monopoly of anybody. We must get out of this conception. Only sannyasis can realize the self. There is nowhere written like that. Self-realization can happen to anyone, under any circumstances. But how it will happen, that's another thing. But these brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, sannyasam and all that is only an established process which can help you. That's all. But it's not guaranteeing you that if I become a sannyasi, I'll be self-realized. There are many instances sannyasis have to fall from their self-realized. They could not make it. They have fallen from that after many years of sannyasa ashram. So, that's an important thing to realize, that the self-realization is not anybody's monopoly. So, Krishna says here, in the Upanishads, if you look at this way, Upanishads also say the same thing. What does Upanishad say? In Keno Upanishad, there is a famous Upanishad called Keno Upanishad. Keno Upanishad says like this. Keno Upanishad says that what you have got here is an opportunity. That is this human body. And the opportunity, if it is not utilized, it says here that you have lost a chance. You have lost a big chance. Keno Upanishad says like this. Iha cheda vedi adasatya masti. Na chedi haved na chedi haved mahadi vinashti. If one has realized here the truth, then he has got it. If he has not realized here, then there is great destruction. After that, Mahadi Vinashti, he says, Na Chediha Vedi Mahadi Vinashti. Iha Veda Vedi Atha Satyam Asti. Right now, here in this world, when we have this opportunity, it should be realized today, to here itself. Otherwise, Mahadi Vinashti, there is a great loss afterwards. The wise ones, having realized in all beings and having turned away from this world, became immortal. How do they say? Bhudeshu, bhudeshu, vijitya dhiraha. That when they started realizing the truth and they started seeing that Krishna is present in every living entity, bhudeshu, bhudeshu, vijitra dhiraha. they became more and more dhira, or more, they became more realized by seeing Krishna's presence in every living entity. Preti asmal logad amrita bhavanti. That amrutatvam means freedom from death. That is amrutatvam. You will see in Upanishads this word uses amrutatvam. Amrutatvam means that nectarian situation of self-realization has happened to them. Amrutatvam bhavanti. That will come in this way. Bhudeshu bhudeshu vichitya dhiraha. That bhudam, living entity after living entity, where they are seeing Krishna's presence in there, and that ignorance in them is leaving them one after the other. Avidya inside goes away from them. As I mentioned yesterday, that our vision of the world can vary from one person to another. Therefore, the Sanskrit word for the world is loka, isn't it? Lokam. Alokya iti lokaha. That is how they explain that. Alokya means how you see the world according to your vasanas inside. Same person, say one person, I'll see him in one way, you will see him in another way. The person is same. Why is that? Because of our vision inside. The vasanas inside, we see another person in another different ways, isn't it? So similarly, the world also, if it can happen with one individual, it can happen with the whole world as well. Our vision can change for this world differently. So, bhudeshu bhudeshu vichitya dhiraha. That bhudeshu bhudeshu. Krishna says here, the wise one, having realized Brahman in all beings, one after the other, this realization happens, and turned away from this world, then he says that this world doesn't exist for him anymore after that. The world doesn't exist because there's only Krishna exist after that. That's an important thing. So, coming back to this, Vedavyasa Maharshi wanted to bring this to everybody. Vedavyasa Maharshi wanted to bring this understanding to everybody. Then, whether once, as I mentioned the story before, one person went to another sage and told him that, I want to take sannyas, he said. So he asked him, why do you want to take sannyas? He said, I want to realize the truth, and I know that you can realize the truth only as a sannyasi, because sannyasi, you got a better opportunity. So he says, what are you today? He says, I am a householder. So what will happen now if you take sannyas? He says, I'm going to take my danda and my dhoti, it'll change its color, and I'll shave up, and all that. So immediately you can see that his concept of sannyasam was nothing but changing clothes. The bodily identity has not left him. He has been thinking all along that he has been a householder. Had he answered the question, saying that I am spirit soul, I am not this body, whereas he presented himself, I am a householder, my wife, I have children, I got, and they are all a problem for me in my spiritual life, so I have to leave them all. This false understanding is driving him. In other words, the knowledge has not developed properly inside. With false understanding, is going to take sannyas, either for escaping from the work or responsibility or whatever. So immediately the sannyasi told him, practically there is no difference with you as a householder and as a sannyasi. It's not going to make any difference. Because you have not realized this identity as the soul yet. What's the point in you becoming a sannyasi? How does it go into help? Then the householder has got the equal bodily identification. Identification with the body as much as the sannyasi has got in that way. So it's not going to make any difference. The peace has to come from inside. How we adjust our situation in this life, that is up to us. How we adjust our own situation. But how to develop this knowledge within us is also our responsibility. Our responsibility. What Krishna is going to talk to us in the second chapter is knowledge. How we cultivate the knowledge and take it seriously, that is left to the individual. How he does it. How he adjusts his own situation and allow this knowledge to grow inside, that is in one's own responsibility. Krishna has given us the proper understanding how to get there and how to put it into practice and develop it properly, whether it's a sannyasi or a householder, it doesn't matter. Some of the personalities who are self-realized, if you came to hear about them, you will be amused to hear that they were self-realized. This one personality called Nisargadatta Maharaj, he was well-known in Maharashtra. He used to live in Bombay. You know what he used to do? He used to make BDs. And he was self-realized. Yeah, we would think that how can he be self-realized? He is not attending Mangalarati, he has not chanted 16 rounds. But he was self-realized. Why? He took his instructions from his spiritual master, whom he approached at the early days in life. Spiritual master told him certain things and he accepted it completely, without any doubt. The result was that, with that knowledge inside developing strongly, and because he was a very reflective person, thoughtful, over a period of time, he realized the truth. And after realization also, he continued this job, but job never bothered him. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find a personality called Dharmavyadha. He was a butcher. He was self-realized. Yeah. How can this happen? According to us, only GBC-approved sannyasi can be self-realized, isn't it? Others are not, cannot be self-realized. This is all misunderstanding. This is not Shastram. Shastram is telling us to be watchful about all these things. This is how institution takes us into a difficult situation. That you have this day by day, you keep on accepting this. Eventually, you start looking down upon others in this world. You start thinking, oh, what is he? Has not even... you don't know what is going through his life, how he is progressing in spiritual life. There are many people in this world, they don't make a big show of their spiritual life. They practice it properly. Inside, the knowledge is growing up. And this story, I'll mention that because probably that's of interest to you. Dharmavyadha's story, you have to read. In Mahabharatam, it runs into chapters. Dharmavyadha was a butcher. Once it so happened, a brahmana from a Kaushigi Gotram, Kaushigi tradition, he performed extreme penances. And he did not know that he has developed a lot of siddhis. Siddhis develop through austerities and penances. Anyone can develop siddhis. If you are very intensely doing it, Hiranyakashipu did that. Many others, Ravana has done that. They can get a lot of siddhis like that. So this person, what's his name? This Kaushigi Brahmana. He was sitting underneath the tree and he was chanting his Gayatri. While chanting his Gayatri, a crow flew over his head. And while flying, the crow passed the stool and it fell on his head, right on the top of his head. He got so angry that in his meditation he opened his eyes and he saw the crow. When he saw the crow, as soon as he opened, the anger all manifested through the eyes. The crow burnt into ashes and fell right in front of him. The crow fell down straight away in front of him. And it was all as a handful of ashes, like that. So the brahmana thought, this is not bad. I've become so powerful that I can just look at people like this and they can be turned into ashes. This is siddhi, nothing but siddhi. Krishna will talk about siddhis in the Ekadasham later. But siddhis come from tapasa. Tapasa means austerities, penances, like that. That brings siddhis, isn't it? All scientific discoveries in the modern world is also siddhis. And the scientists, they perform a lot of tapas for that. If you think about it, they go to their office and laboratories and work there for days and nights. And you look into some of these big, big scientists, they work day and night to find out the truth, isn't it? And they succeeded, and that's the siddhi what they got. All the research and experiments and results what they obtained from that. That's the siddhis they got. So, it's not big difference. Material scientists work for siddhis. The spiritualists also, if they go in that route, particularly the yoga system, brings these siddhis. So, our Kaushigi Brahmana, as soon as he got this, he became a little proud, because that will come inside. When you have siddhis, it will happen. So, he started going out, and one day he went to a house begging for food. So, when he went looking for the food, because brahmanas are allowed to beg, isn't it? So he went for looking for the food. The lady in the house, she was there at home. So generally they ask for food three times. You are allowed to ask for food 3 times. They are restricted in all these things. It's not that you can go and ask from anyone and everyone as much as you want and store yourself, pile up food. That's not allowed. So he went and asked for 3 times. Bhiksham dehi, give me bhiksha, he said. The lady was inside. She did not answer. Deliberately she didn't answer him. And he again repeated, asking for food. She wouldn't answer. The third time when he said, ask for food, from inside she replied, right now I'm busy. Her husband was at home. She was busy looking after him, attending to him. Can you wait for some time? As soon as I finish my duty, I'll come to you, she said. And I am not the crow who will burn into ashes just by you looking at me, she answered from inside. He was in a shock. How does she know about all these things? What has happened to me? Says. So he waited some time, and then when she finished her duty inside, she came out and gave him some food. So he asked this question. I'm a bit shocked that you came to know what happened to me. That I thought that by my anger, you may also face the same fate will happen to you. But I'm a little bit surprised that this has not happened. So she says, if you want to know the answer, go to Dharmavyadha. He's living in Benares. Go and see him and ask him about it, he said. How this has happened? So she won't give an answer, straight answer. So he goes to Benares. This Kaushika Brahmana goes to Benares. When he went to Benares, in Benares, he inquired everyone. He was thinking, this Dharmavyadha may be a highly realized soul who will be sitting there as a sannyasi with a danda and everything. This is all in his mind while going. When he went and inquired there, Dharmavyadha was well known, but not as a sannyasi, as a butcher. First class butcher. Every day was cutting the meat and selling it. So he went to eventually he managed to find out who Dharmavyadha was. After a lot of inquiry in Benares, he got to the place. And he went and saw this Dharmavyadha. As soon as he got there, he was disgusted with the smell of the meat and also this man standing there fully dressed up like a butcher. You know the butcher, how he looks like. You can imagine with a big mustache and the big knife in the hand and the turban and all that ready to... finish. He's standing there very peacefully. So when he got there, he had to go because he has been told to ask him why it has happened like this. He went there. Dharmavyadha's first question was, did that householder lady send you from there to me? He is asking this question. So when he asked that question, Kaushiki Brahmana thought, this is not an ordinary person. He's somewhat very special. He says to Dharmavyadha that, yes, she sent me here, told me to ask you about it. So Dharmavyadha says that, if you could wait for a few minutes, let me finish this work, what I have to do, and I'll come with you. And we'll go home and we'll talk about it, he said. So Dharmavyadha, after he finished his work, he took him home to his house, the butcher's house, and Dharmavyadha tells him that all I have done in my life is this. I have executed what I had to do, but within me I had this understanding, I am none of these. It was very clear in his head all the time. I am none of these. The prarabdham has brought him to do this work. Somehow he had to do that. It was his prarabdham to do that. But that did not restrain him from realizing the truth. In other words, he was above these things. It's a very difficult thing to understand for ordinary people. How can you be so separated from your work and your consciousness? But he was so separated that it has never affected him at all. And that means he has become a jnani. He has realized jnani. And jnani can see others' mind inside. If you remember Sudeva Goswami's case also, we've seen it. That he knew what is going on from your heart. What doubts you have inside, he will know from... because it's like a mirror. It reflects inside. Consciousness, if it's very clear, everything what is inside you will reflect in me. And everything you can see, what doubts you have, what questions you have, what purpose you have come for, everything will be known to you without you telling him. So that's why Dharmavyadha was a realized soul. That lady in the house, She was a realized soul. So, why I am saying this is, where, who gets self-realized? Very difficult to say. Very, very difficult to say. You can never think, imagine personalities who have got self-realized in this world. They were not known throughout the world as great personalities. They were not preaching or anything. They practiced it and they realized the truth. So it can happen to anyone under any circumstances. Many instances people have come to know about it, but then there's nothing you can do. If you know such a jnanis who have come to realize the truth, their experience is something of value to others also. That it can happen. This is why Krishna says, Ascharyaval. It's a wonderful thing, the self-realization. He says, where it will happen, to whom it will happen, you cannot say. And Krishna is giving the example of this Dharmavyada to us. In the next chapter, in 12th chapter, in the Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna says, Uddhava, all these people got self-realized. And one of them is this Dharmavyada, who is a butcher. So, self-realization is a completely independent process where your effort may not be always the key behind it. Effort is necessary, effort in the right way, that the Shraddha is more important than the effort. Your seriousness in there. The seriousness is that makes you conscious that this is something I need in this very life before I leave this body. That seriousness is that makes it practically successful in a person's spiritual life. So Krishna will say about these things, all important things. So, as I mentioned before, in the middle of a battlefield, Vedavyasa Maharshi is presenting Bhagavad Gita to us. That itself shows that it can be practiced anywhere. If it can be practiced in battlefield, it can be practiced at home. It can be practiced at office also. It can be practiced anywhere, so long as your mind is properly tuned in that direction. Then, so trying to think that, just like sometimes we have this understanding, the world is not very peaceful, therefore I am not peaceful. Therefore I cannot practice spiritual life. That's misunderstanding again. This world is never going to be peaceful. That we also have to accept it. This world will always be like this as it is. By thinking that I can make the world peaceful and then after that I can practice spiritual life, that's not going to happen. Sometimes due to excessive attachment to dharmam, this will happen. You know, when you get connected to dharmam too much in that direction, we'll start thinking that maybe I'm not following the dharmam properly, that's why these things are happening. No, in spiritual life, there is nothing that stops you from advancing. Body will drag you down. Mind will drag you down. But spirit will not. Spirit is in your control. Krishna says that. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, if you look carefully, you will see, Krishna said two things in Bhagavad Gita. In the sixth chapter, he is telling us, Uddhared Atman Atmanam, elevate yourself. Yourself, you make the progress spiritually. I cannot help you. You should do it, he says. Atmanam Avasadayed. By your own effort, come up. Atmeva hi atmano bandhu, atmeva ribhira atmana. For you, you are the friend, nobody else. And for you, you are the enemy. What does that mean? It means that for you to advance spiritually, nobody else in this world is stopping you from doing that. And for you, similarly, to go down from the spiritual path, you alone is the cause behind it. You don't have to blame everyone else. Sometimes we think that the modes of nature is completely responsible. On a spiritual platform, it has nothing to do. As long as the three modes of nature is in the mind, in the senses, in the intelligence. That's where the modes of nature is. So if you feel weak in your mind, and if you move away, come to the mental platform, then spiritual life becomes difficult. If you learn to separate yourself from the mind, body, senses, intelligence and move on the spiritual path, you can make the progress. That's what Krishna is saying there. The same thing Krishna is saying at the end of Bhagavad Gita, after saying this in the sixth chapter, he says, Sarvadharma Parityajyamamekam Sharanam Raja, Krishna says. So two things were spoken at two different times in Bhagavad Gita. in two different ways. On one point he's saying, telling you, elevate yourself. No, he's not talking about himself anything. And then another point he's telling you, surrender unto me. Isn't it? So before surrender, this is required, elevating oneself. Surrender comes later, at the very end. And surrender won't happen unless one has put the effort in before that surrender happens. Yudhishthira Maharaj had this problem, too much sticking to dharma. So when Yudhishthira was staying in Hastinapur, at the very end, after the war, Mahabharata war, Vidura arrived there, and Narada Maharshi also arrived there. So Dharmaputra, Yudhishthira Maharaj, was still lamenting, oh, this war has happened because of me. I am responsible for this situation. And he was seeing the war through his dharmic eyes. Through dharmam he was seeing. And he was thinking, Krishna has not acted properly, therefore this has happened, and he was blaming Krishna. And all that things, you know, what happened in Mahabharatam. Bhagavatam, it mentions there, isn't it? So, at that point, Narada Maharshi comes there. If you look into the first canto of Bhagavatam, you will find a very interesting logic, what Narada Maharshi put forth to Yudhishthira Maharaj. What did he say? He said to the Yudhishthira Maharaj like this. He said, my dear Yudhishthira, what are you lamenting about? Do you know the rule of the law of this world? He says to Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira is telling him, well, what is there to know? Only thing is, I'm responsible for millions of people getting killed. And he must have probably felt that very strongly. So he recited these words. You can take Bhagavatam and look at it. It says like this. Ahastani sahastanam apadani chadushpadam phalguni mahadam tatra jivo jivasya jivanam. In the hot conditions, you will see, in the hot weather conditions, when it rains, first time the rains come, a lot of flies will come, seeing the lights on. The lights are on, a lot of flies will come. When the flies come, because they are attracted by the light, isn't it? They get attracted by the light and the flies start coming in. As soon as the flies come, the next thing will be followed by the frogs. You will only see this in the hot weather conditions. The frogs want to eat the flies. Why? The flies will come and they start dancing around the light. They will, especially if it is oil lamps or something, they will lose their wings. They'll get burned and the flies will fall on the ground. And the frogs know this. You see how in the nature everything is set up like this. The frogs know their food is there ready for them. They arrive there to eat these flies which has fallen down, who have lost their wings. They can't fly anymore. They lie there. The frogs come and eat that. Frogs are having a feast there. They are enjoying it very much. And hearing the frogs' sound, the snakes start come the next one to eat them, because their food is arranged for them here. The frog is the food arranged for the snake. The flies are the food arranged for the frog. This is nature's arrangement, that you can't change it. It's nature's arrangement is like that. So he says there, Ahastani sahastanam avadani chadushpadam, that one who has got two-legged animal has its animal, a four-legged animal is its food. So it's created like that. That is Krishna's creation. And you, there is no point in you lamenting about it, he says to Yudhishthira Maharaj. Yudhishthira, if you are thinking that you are maintaining this world, get out of this illusion, he said. Apadani chadushpadam, phalguni mahadam tatra. The whole creation is running under his direction. Jivo jivasya jivanam. One living entity is put to another living entity. If Kauravas were to be killed in this war, the decision has been taken by somebody else, not you. But you are thinking that you are responsible for this thing. And you are, but the person who has made the decision, he is somebody else that you don't know, he says. So you can see from the Bhagavatam that what is meant to happen will happen. There you can't change this. You can't change the flow of this world. That is another misunderstanding we have got. That we think that by our preaching the world is going to become better. That will never happen. That will never happen. If you want, you can give it a try and at the end you can see what happens. That this is not under our control. It is not under our control. Changing the world is not under our control. It is set in motion already by the person who has created it. And it will go on in its own way. You can't alter that flow any time, under any circumstances. That's what he was saying. Then, so, In other words, in the middle of all these things, one has to search for the truth. One has to realize the truth. That was Krishna's point. That if it is, if you are trying to think that I'll preach and I'll change the world and that way I will become self-realized, that may not happen. That may not happen. You may be trying to, and you can remember that many, many people have tried to change this world. And there is a higher power above everything, which is controlling everything, and that we cannot alter. It is only according to that plan things will happen in this world. So therefore, even Avatara Purushas, just like Lord Ramchandra had come here, and there are many incarnations of Krishna has happened. Eventually Krishna himself came here personally, and still the world is the same. Nothing has happened. As soon as Krishna left, things also changed, isn't it? So what does it indicate? It indicates that the world has some higher power behind everything is controlling. We shouldn't wait for the world to change. World may or may not change. That is another thing. So Krishna's point here is that why do we practice spiritual life then, if it is like that? It is the reason for that is that, you know this example, that the dog's tail. The dog's tail, you can never straighten it, isn't it? The tail will always be bent. If you put a pipe on the tail, and as say for 100 years, and you take the pipe off, the tail will go back to its position. And it's the same nature with this world also. The world, you may, apparently it may look everything is getting right. And as soon as you move away, in a few years time, it will go back to its original state. So by practicing Krishna consciousness, you may not be able to change this bending in the tail, but you can remove this bending what is inside us, in our own consciousness. We have a lot of bends inside. That's Vakrabuddhi it is called. This crookedness inside. That will go. That you can change. But you can't change the world outside. That's another important point. So, now coming back to Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita was spoken in the middle of Mahabharata war. And it comes in Bhishma Parva. Bhishma Parva. As you know, Mahabharata war lasted 18 days, isn't it? 18 days it lasted. It is on the 10th day that Bhishma fell. Bhishma fell on the 10th day. So, during that period, while Bhishma was fighting the war, it was before that, that the Mahabharata war was going on, and on the 10th day when it was spoken, that Vedavyasa Maharshi told Dhritarashtra Maharaj, that do you want the eyes to see the Mahabharata war? He had asked this before this. Before Bhishma fell, he asked Dhritarashtra, Vedavyas had that capacity to give the eyes to someone for some time. If he wants to see, he can provide that. Yes, that capacity. Sage, isn't it? Great personality. Dhritarashtra said, no, I don't want to see the war, he said. So when he said he doesn't want to see the war, he said, I wouldn't mind, I will tell you when I need to hear about the war, but right now I don't want to hear, he said. But when Bhishma fell in the battle, Sanjay came up to him and told Dhritarashtra that Bhishma has finished, Bhishma is over, is finished, he said. When Sanjay reported this to Dhritarashtra, Dhritarashtra was shaken. Dhritarashtra never thought that Bhishma will die. Bhishma was such a powerful person. And Bhishma's departure shook Dhritarashtra from inside. He felt that the whole world is shaking. It was then that he wanted a radio commentary on this. He said, I don't want to see the war, but I cannot believe this, that this can happen. He said, Bhishma's death was quite unusual for him. And Sanjay started reporting to him about this. And on the 10th day, when Bhishma fell, that Dhritarashtra, who was a blind person, and immediately he started seeing something inside. inside he started, some realization started coming to him that why things are going in the wrong way. Up to this time he was very much sure that Duryodhana will win the war. He had certain doubts. When Krishna went for the conciliation talks before the war, Krishna tried very hard to make Dhritarashtra understand that this war is going to bring disaster for the whole family. Dhritarashtra heard everything, one won't take it seriously. So Krishna showed the universal form at that point, and Dhritarashtra saw the form but still wouldn't accept that war is going to bring an end to all the problems, that it's going to happen in this way. He never thought like that. This was the mood of Dhritarashtra all the time. He was like this. He was in this way he acted. He will not take anything seriously. Duryodhana said when he saw Krishna's universal form, oh, it's some magic or something, he says. And he pulled out from that straight away. He wouldn't accept anything else. So Duryodhana was like that. Dhritarashtra was like this. Won't accept Krishna's advice. Vidura advised him. Well known as Vidura Niti, isn't it? Because Krishna was, Dhritarashtra was inviting Vidura all the time. Because as the war was approaching, Dhritarashtra was getting more and more disturbed inside. Was something going to happen now? The fear was inside. But the faith was all put in Bhishma, Drona, Karna and all who were there on their side. There was no chance of them losing it. But still, there was some fear inside. Vidura spoke to him, and Vidura spoke to him and gave him enough advice not to go for the war and get rid of Duryodhana from there. He could have done that if he wanted, but he didn't do it. He stayed with Duryodhana. Now, what else happened? At one point in time, our Yudhishthira, in the Bhagavadam, you will see this. Krishna has gone to where was in Mathura. Krishna was in Mathura at this time, and he sent Akrura to talk to Pandavas and the Kauravas. You will see at the end of I think it is in the end of 10th canto, somewhere in the middle of 10th canto, when Krishna appeared from the it's in the first part of the 10th canto, first part of the 10th canto. And have you noticed that when Akrura went to see him? When Akrura went to see him, Akrura had a meeting with Akrura had a meeting with Kunti Devi and the children. They were all living together at that time. Kunti Devi, Dhritarashtra, the Pandavas and everything. But war was imminent. War was going to happen. It was then that they arrived there and he says here, Sudeva Goswami is saying this, that Dhritarashtra said like this to Akrura. Akrura, whatever you have said is quite true. I fully accept it. But I can't change, he says. Don't ask me to change. My decision I have taken, that I can't change. But whatever you say is true. Now if you get somebody like this, what do you do with him? Who gives you an answer like this? And he says here that whatever you have spoken, so Akrura is saying to him that my attachment to my children is very, very strong, to Duryodhana and the others. And whatever you are telling me, it's not staying in my mind. It's not helping me. And who can ultimately help? He says, Krishna has a plan, that's what's going to happen. He's saying this also. This is the funniest thing. Krishna has his own plan, what can I do about it? But I can't change, he says. And there is a beautiful verse there. Yo durvimarsha pataya nijamaya edam srishtva gunan vibhajade tadanu pravishtaha tasmai namo dhiravabhoda vihara tandram samsara chakra gadaye parameshwaraya. This is that verse. Yo durvimarsha padaya nijamaya edam, who by his unknown potency of this maya, by the power of maya, who creates this whole creation, and who enters into it as the soul, antaryami, who enters into every living being, And who creates Krishna enters into us in two forms, isn't it? One who enters as a super soul, Paramatma, he does not do anything. As a witness, he sits there. He enters into us as Jivalma and he does everything and suffers the happiness and result, enjoyment and the miseries, both. As Jivalma, he suffers, and as Paramatma, he witnesses this. So here he is saying here, he enters inside and who executes a different karmam and who really receives all the reactions of his karmam, and nobody can understand this whole thing. If you go into fourth canto, you will see this. Lord Shiva talking about this, about Krishna. And who does all these things, and he is the person who creates this wheel of samsara, material existence. It's going on under his guidance, this is happening. Who can escape from this? Dhritarashtra is saying this to Akrura. So, if you know that you are in danger, what should you do? You should know how to escape from there. And somebody is giving you some advice. Dhritarashtra should have gone to Krishna, fell at his feet, and asked for forgiveness for what has happened, and taken shelter. To do that, Krishna himself has gone and spoken to him. Imagine that. What else can Krishna do? That's why Krishna said, this person can never be rectified. So if we become Dhritarashtra in our nature, then Krishna also can't help us. We also have to remember that. That Bhagavad Gita was spoken keeping us as Dhritarashtra actually. We don't want to change. We are like this. We will find all excuses not to change our attitude in spiritual life. That Krishna is telling us something, we won't take it seriously. Krishna is telling us this is like this, this, this. No, we will argue against this with the science and try to question that also. So, important point here is, this verse is very important. It's a well-known verse. Do durvimarsha pataya nijamaya yedam srishtva gunan vibhajade tadanu pravishaha tasmainamo durava bhoda vihara tandram. Durava bhoda vihara tandram. Very difficult to understand Krishna's plans in this world. Nobody knows what will happen tomorrow. Vihara tandram samsara chakra gadaye parameshwaraya. This material cycle will continue to rotate like this. And we will appear sometime, we will disappear from this world. We'll appear again, we'll disappear again. So what does it show? It shows that although Dhritarashtra was not a devotee in the sense, he had the knowledge in him. At least he's accepting that the knowledge is there, isn't it? But here, what is important to remember here is, Dhritarashtra had always sound advice. He had very sound advice. Vidura has given him advice. Akrura has given him advice. Plus, in Mahabharata, you will find, there was a great sage called Sanal Kumara Maharshi. He goes to see him. Sanal Kumara Maharshi is one among the four Kumaras. The highly learned Kumara brothers, four Kumaras. This Sanal Kumara Maharshi has a discussion with Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra asking questions. And Sanal Kumara Maharshi answering everything. It is known as Sanal Sujadiyam. It's a famous book on its own, Sanal Sujadiyam. In Sanal Sujadiyam, it's a discussion between Dhritarashtra and Sanal Kumara Maharshi. Sanal Kumara Maharshi talking to him about the soul, transitory nature, everything. And trying to avoid this war, what is happening. So, sages have come to him. Finally, Krishna himself had come and spoken to him. And still, my blind uncle says, I will remain blind. Blind uncle doesn't want to change. So, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, when Vedavyasa Maharshi presented Bhagavad Gita to us, he gave us this warning. That if you are like Dhritarashtra, there's no point in reading Bhagavad Gita. It won't have any effect. That Dhritarashtra mind has to go. Dhritarashtra's attitude has to change. That look at Arjuna. Now three personalities I mentioned before heard Bhagavad Gita. Anjaneya Swami, Arjuna and Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra heard Bhagavad Gita but nothing has happened. No change. Same thing. Oh, my family, my children. They're the priority. Arjuna, and sometime when he asked a question, immediately Anjaneya Swami jumped in and gave the answer. Before Krishna gave the answer. Anjaneya Swami gave the answer. When Krishna heard that, he says to Anjaneya Swami, Is this a proper etiquette? When I'm talking to you, jumped in and gave the answer. Do you know that you'll become a devil in the next life? He says to him. Anjaneya Swami says, as long as Bhagavad Gita is inside, even if you become a devil or a brahmana, what does it matter? He says. That is the power of Bhagavad Gita. If Bhagavad Gita is inside, if you realize Bhagavad Gita, whether you are a brahmana, whether you are a shudra, whether you are a devil, whether you are a demon, what does it matter? He says. And Krishna liked that answer very much when Anjaneya Swami answered like this. Because Krishna says, with this Bhagavad Gita, I run the whole show. The whole creation is running under the rules of this Bhagavad Gita, as far as Krishna is concerned. Trilokan, he says, all the three worlds, palayamyaham, I maintain it with this Bhagavad Gita, rules of Bhagavad Gita. So, this is how we see three personalities, and our Dhritarashtra Maharaj, even after hearing Bhagavad Gita, has no effect. Absolutely nothing. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, when you go into this, the frame of mind is important. That is why they say like this, that in all circumstances, the knowledge, spiritual knowledge, can develop in a person. Nothing can stop him from realizing the truth. Gita's theory, once it is known properly, as soon as you hear Bhagavad Gita, Shravanam, when it happens, the anubhuti inside must come up, is developed inside, that there is something so special about Bhagavad Gita's knowledge that once it starts making some impact on you, which you don't know when it will happen, but it can happen. The impact will start waking you up inside about the truth. The truth is that the soul inside is to be realized, the self-realization, in other words, what Krishna is talking about. So, here, there is a tattvam here. In Bhagavad Gita, Dhritarashtra is presented, which is generally considered to be the jiva. Jiva means all of us. We are the jivas who are Dhritarashtra. And this jiva in Dhritarashtra had who? He had, who was his help? The greatest help he had was Gandhari, wasn't it? Gandhari was the only person who could help. Although he was blind, the person who really could have helped him was Gandhari, isn't it? Being close to him more than anyone else. But what did Gandhari do? Gandhari took this cloth and tied her eyes. Now, this question is always asked, has Gandhari done the right thing? Because if husband is blind, she says she is a very chaste person. And in order to show her chastity, she tied her eyes with this towel and blinded herself to show her loyalty or attachment to him. But if the husband is blind, should the wife also become blind? Does that help? So naturally, Gandhari was a good wife, but she was never a good mother. This is the important thing there. She was a good wife. She wanted to be very loyal to him. But her duty, instead of guiding the children in the right direction, she failed there by tying her own eyes. So, jiva, all of us, in other words, the Dhritarashtra's case, Dhritarashtra's intelligence has to be guided through. Somebody has to guide him through because he was blind. We are also blind. Jiva is also blind. What guides us through in this world? Our intelligence. Isn't it? So, intelligence has a big role in this, in driving the mind in the right direction. And there, if you don't have a right person to guide you through in the proper way, to check you when you are going wrong, to put you in the right track, somebody, the intelligence is not properly handled, you will end up in a big disaster. A great disaster will happen. Like Dhritarashtra's case. Had Gandhari, instead of tying her eyes with the cloth, seen to the children and stopped them from becoming so in the wrong direction, going in the wrong direction, and becoming inimical to the Pandavas and creating this fight within the family, she could have saved them from a disaster, but it didn't happen. So therefore, Gandhari on one hand, she is accepted as a good wife, but on the other hand, it's mentioned that she was not a good mother from this aspect. Now, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari is considered to be the jiva, and Gandhari is the intelligence. For us also, it is the same thing. In the same situation, look at Arjuna. Arjuna saw that he has a problem, isn't it? He has a problem. That is what Arjuna Vishada Yoga means. The first chapter is Arjuna's desperate situation. So the important thing is he has recognized he has a problem. That itself is a first success. That to recognize I've got a problem is the sign of a good person, that he is intelligent. And he realized that at this point I need proper advice from somewhere, a right source. So what did he do? He decided, in my intelligence position, I will install Krishna to control my intelligence. I'll ask Krishna to drive my mind. So jiva also, instead of becoming Dhritarashtra, has to turn and start thinking in this direction. In Mahabharata, there are two personalities which you have to very closely watch. What are they? Who are they? One is Arjuna and the other one is Karna. Vedavyasa Maharshi's knowledge of psychology is so high. You will see when you go through Mahabharata how it is working. Karna is Arjuna's brother, elder brother, isn't it? And as far as the knowledge is concerned, Karna was a much more capable than Arjuna. And very often people feel when they read Mahabharata for Karna, how he ended up like this. And he was such a graceful person. Graceful means very magnanimous, highly charitable, and not so selfish at all. Even if you read about Karna, it is amazing personality Karna is. And Arjuna knew very well he is more capable than Arjuna. He knew that very well. Mahabharata war will tell you that. So knowing all these things, Arjuna took Krishna's shelter, isn't it? So in other words, Arjuna was guided by Krishna. Now look at where Karna has gone and taken shelter. Who was driving Karna's chariot? Do you remember? Who was driving? Shalya. Shalya. That word itself is Shalya. Shalya means headache. On the one hand, when Arjuna fell down, felt weak, Krishna lifted him up. Remember? Krishna lifted him through Bhagavad Gita and brought him to his right position. Karna, very powerful, wanted to fight the war. Shalya pulled him down. If you look into Mahabharata, you will see this. Constantly he is telling Karna, don't fight, it's wasteful. You don't have the capacity to fight this. Suppose somebody is telling you all the time like this, what will happen to you? Will you be able to fight? He's sitting right in front of you and saying, every arrow when Karna was shooting, he says, oh, that's not in the right direction. He says, you shot the wrong arrow. Somebody sits and tells you like this. So what does it show? It's showing to us, whom do you accept as your guide in this world? That is the first thing. If you accept Shalya like Karna did, even if you may be very powerful, you are a very capable person, but if your intelligence is guided by someone like Shalya, your war is finished. You have lost it. Arjuna was powerful, no doubt. But Arjuna had the right person there. Purna Vastu. Duryodhana saw that. We'll come to that later. Each and every verse is very, very important in the Bhagavad Gita. Especially in the first chapter, you will notice these things. Duryodhana's psychology, if you look at, you will see the words that's coming from his mouth. It's very much like ours. The way he talks. He's seeing the huge army of the... His army is much bigger than the Pandava's army. Pandava had 7 Atrauhinis. Duryodhana had 11 Atrauhinis. So totally 18 Atrauhinis. Atrauhinis details are given in the Bhagavad Gita. You can look at it. What it means. How many soldiers and all that. So many hundreds and thousands of soldiers. So number of soldiers wise, he had many more soldiers. Isn't it? Who... Duryodhana, but still fearful. And the best among the archers, Bhishma, Drona, Karna, the three most powerful personalities was on his side, and still not happy. still fearful. And you know what he went and said? Aparyaptam tadasmagam bhalam vishmabhirachidam. Paryaptam tadasmagam bhalam vimabhirachidam. He says, looking at my army, I find there is something missing there. He says, it's not complete, he says. Whereas look at, Bhishma is protecting this army. But he's not going and saying this to Bhishma, remember that. What? Because he knows if he talks to Bhishma, he'll get the proper answer from him. So what did he do? He goes to Drona and tells Drona these things. Because Drona, you can say anything, because he is under his payroll, so you can tell him what you want. He knows all these things. If you study the Duryodhana's psychology, it's very interesting. Duryodhana knows Bhishma is not under the payroll, because Bhishma can do what he wants, he's like that. And plus he brought him up from a child, isn't it? So he knows Duryodhana don't have the guts to go and tell him. But Drona, he knows, I can tell him. So if you look in the Bhagavad Gita in the first chapter, you'll see, he goes to Drona to talk all these things, not to Bhishma. Bhishma, he keeps away from him. He has a fear inside. If I say something, something can go wrong. But to Drona, he says, Aparyaptam tadasmagam bhalam Bhishma virachidam. Drona, he's called in sense of Acharya and all that, and says to him, looking at my army, I find that there is something missing. It's not complete, he says. But looking at the other side, where Bhima is managing the army, everything looks a little complete. Why is that? Because Duryodhana also started feeling there is one complete thing which is sitting on the other side, Krishna. So Duryodhana also started experiencing this. That complete thing there will make it complete everything. That's the thing that will complete you. So in our life also, we'll become complete when that thing is inside, when we realize the truth. When you realize Krishna, your life is complete. Then there is no more wavering the mind, going this way, that way. That Purna Vastu, Krishna is called as Purna Vastu, complete thing. He is complete in everything, isn't it? Om Purnamadam, Purnamidam, Purnal, Purnam. Ishavanishad says this, isn't it? Udachare Purnasya Purnamadai. What is that Purnam? This is that Purnam, Krishna. Krishna is that Purnam thing. If that Purnam is inside, you are Purnam. The Purnam is not inside, you are never Purnam. And that is what Duryodhana felt at that moment. This feeling that Duryodhana felt, that keep that in your mind. We also will feel the same incomplete consciousness as long as Krishna is not there. So quicker we realize Krishna inside, everything automatically gets filled up. There's no more inquiry after that. It is always complete. We'll discuss tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.